Let's turn to 1 Peter chapter 2. We're in the middle of going through this short book. Given it's short, we're doing about 4 verses a session, so it'll take us a couple of years to finish. It's on page 1152 of the church Bibles, I think. But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. Dear friends, I urge you as foreigners and exiles to abstain from sinful desires which wage war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that, though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. Once a week, I get up at 5:30 a.m. to go training in Clapham Common. You would be very much forgiven for not believing me here. I'm not a person naturally prone to exercise. I used to run the house touch at the school, an empire amongst the people on pocket money. And I love Domino's Pizza, who are conveniently placed at the end of my road, which means I get collection deals instead of delivery. Terrible thing. And I consider my bed the best purchase I've ever made. I love being comfortable. I dread getting up the day before these sessions, and I dread it when I wake up. But I don't have a huge amount of choice because Nick, my trainer, used to be a professional boxer and knows what I love. So wouldn't be best pleased if I didn't show for his 6 a.m. session. Yet every time I go, I feel great. 9 times out of 10, I'm greeted with an amazing sunrise over the common and the peace of the city waking up. It's quiet and it's beautiful. Working out is hard, but there's a deep satisfaction that I'm working on something greater than myself, maybe getting myself in shape for my wedding next year. And I feel great afterwards, filled up with excitement for the day, and so Nick tells me my metabolism is much higher. My point today is that the Christian life is a bit like a 5:30 a.m. workout, and I think often we are hitting the snooze button and skipping going on. Let's turn back to the passage. It talks about being temporary residents. It talks about being exiles and foreigners in a country that we are traveling through. As Paul puts it in Romans, we are not in the world, but of, sorry, we're not of the world, but in the world. The world is so often focused on the self and very much a you do you mentality. Whatever goes, whatever makes you happy, you do that. It's about making things comfortable. God's way is often not a comfortable, easy way. It's the short-term pain, long-term gain path of getting up and working out, of putting effort in and hard work to hone and develop ourselves. And by snoozing, we are taking the easy path away from the opportunities he presents to us. There are 2 aspects I want to speak about today of comfort. The first being what the New Living Translation calls worldly desires, that again, that wage war against our souls, the things he perhaps wants us to turn away from. The second being the easy path of ignoring the opportunities he puts in front of us to get involved in the lives of others. So we're looking in and we're looking out. Let's look at the latter first. God has so much planned for us. He wants us to speak to that homeless person on the street, to visit that person who knows us that seems lonely, make them feel valued, to share your relative riches with those who need provision. This is more often than not the way that he actually acts in people's lives, and he wants us to be involved in that. He wants us to be involved in his plans and his journey for others. I'm sure most of us agree that these things are hard. It is hard to sit down with someone and offer them the breakfast you bought for yourself. It is hard to be friends with that difficult person in the office who people shy away from. But once done, these things come with an amazing realization that God wanted you to be part of that and that you've made a difference in that person's life because of his direction. The other equally amazing thing is that God knows both us and the person he's drawing us to better than we'll ever know ourselves, and we can trust him to do what is right. He won't ever ask us something that he knows we cannot do, so we can trust and rest in the fact that he knows what he's doing even if we don't. And further, he will use and make sense of things that don't make sense to us. This means we can trust him to pitch things at our level. It also means he will never run out of things to ask us So if you think you're done, you are quite mistaken. Christians do not, of course, have a monopoly on doing good and selfless things. Gandhi famously remarked that he loves our Christ, but not our Christians. The difference, however, is that it's God's people we carry out good deeds whilst walking in step with him. We get to experience his joy and see people through his eyes. It's a partnership with him rather than a lone enterprise, and that's what makes the difference. He also wants us, as it says in verse 11, to abstain from sinful desires that wage war in the soul. This is quite a heavy statement to make. God has made us for way, God's made ways for us to live. And although he had infinite patience and endless forgiveness for us, forging our own path does put things in the way of our great relationship and pushes us away from him. We will all know the story of the prodigal son in Luke 15, which gives us a great picture of these two lives that we can choose, two lives that we can live, and the free choice we have to follow either. The younger son goes off and squanders his wealth. He lives the life as he thinks he should live. He has a lot of fun, and he soon finds emptiness, not just in his bank balance, but in his moral life. And so he comes back to his father, who welcomes him back and rejoices. This is, of course, fairly biased, being Jesus telling the sermon, the parable, and a fairly obvious point, but it's that life with the Father that we identify with and the one that he pulls us towards. It's easy to see Jesus' point that life gives fulfillment and not the previous one. This stuff is often hard to follow, as is answering the opportunities he gives us. Jesus himself tells us that the Christian life is not necessarily an easy one. Indeed, G.K. Chesterton famously said that the Christian ideal has not been tried and found wanting, but has been found difficult and untried. If we are willing to put our trust in God, we will not be disappointed. Jesus promises us life in all its fulfillment, and we just have to take the first step with him in faith. James talks about faith without works, without deeds, and highlights the importance of looking in to our relationship with Jesus and looking out to our relationship with others. Jesus himself, with his two great commandments, tells us to love the Lord our God with all our heart, our soul, and our mind, and loving our neighbour as ourself. It seems to me both of these points can easily be softened a little bit too much comfort. So my question to you, and very much to myself, is where are you hitting the snoozer button? If you can think of something, why don't you come up for prayer with us after this and discuss it with him. And please spend a little bit of thought for 5:30 a.m. tomorrow as I get up. Thank you.